Election Day is next Tuesday, and while there's a lot of national races on the ballot for President, Vice President, U.S. Senate, and U.S. Congress, there are a lot of important state legislative races, too. In our listening area, there is one state Senate race and eight state assembly races up for grabs. And we at Wisconsin Public Radio's Western Wisconsin Studios have introduced you to all of the candidates in those races, except one. Tonight, we'll finish it off with our nine-week series of state legislative candidate forums. This is the West Side 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum, live at the Durand High School. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'll introduce our candidates in just a bit, but first I'll explain what parts of our listening area are within the 93rd. The new 93rd Assembly District includes all of Pepin County, Pierce County, except for the city and town of River Falls, the southern third of Dunn County, parts of western Eau Claire County, and the town of Maxville in Buffalo County. Cities and villages within the district include Prescott, Ellsworth, Bay City, Maiden Rock, Stockholm, Pepin, Elmwood, Spring Valley, a southeastern portion of the city of Eau Claire, and the city from which we are broadcasting, Durand. Now let's meet the candidates. I'd like to welcome Republican incumbent State Representative Warren Petrick. Representative Petrick was elected to the State Assembly in 2010. He is a musician and co-founder of the group The Memories and has also worked for United Cerebral Palsy of West Central Wisconsin. Warren Petrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure, indeed. And next, I'd like to welcome Democratic challenger Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith held the 93rd State Assembly seat from 2006 until he was defeated in 2010 by Representative Petrick. Smith is also a former small business owner who lives in Eau Claire. Jeff Smith, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Rich. I'm glad to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you as well. Now, to our listeners, both in the audience and listening at home, we want you to be part of this forum as well by asking your direct questions to these two candidates seated beside me. For those in the live audience, if you haven't already filled out a card, you can grab a hold of the attendant and fill out a card, and we will get a mic to you as soon as possible. And for those of you at home, as always, we want you to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 800-228-5615. Or if you would rather, you can post a question or comment on our Westside Facebook page. Now, first, before we get into any questions, I'd like to give the candidates a few minutes to give us a brief biography of themselves and explain why they're running for the 93rd Assembly seat. Jeff Smith, we'll start with you.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. My background, like you mentioned, was as a small businessman. I right out of high school, worked with my father and bought the business from my father. That has been around for 58 years. I sold that business last year. So I could dedicate full time to this endeavor, but during my adult years, I've also served as a town chair in the town of Brunswick, and that rolled into I wanted to give more. I wanted to be able to really make a difference, and I ran for the legislature and won that seat in 2006 and served from 2007 to 2011.
All right, and Warren Petrick, a brief bio and why you're running for a second term, if you will.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it. I grew up in the little town of Boyceville, so I have much in common with much of my new district. The redistricting was a fundamental change in what it looks like, and I enjoy the small-town atmosphere. I enjoy the people very, very much, and I believe that I am well-tuned into their challenges and their opportunities that we have in this district. I, growing up there, then went on to finish my degree in Eau Claire. I graduated in 1973 from high school, 78 from college, and then went on to be on the road for about 25 years with the Memories, came back and did the United Cerebral Palsy Community Relations for about 15 years. In 2010, I looked at what was happening at the state level and was asked by many people to run, basically in response to the business climate or lack thereof in the state. I saw increasing taxes. I saw a struggling economy. I saw thousands of jobs lost, thousands of businesses that left the state, and an emergency fiscal crisis. So I looked at that. I said, it is time to run. It's time for some leadership that will allow small businesses to thrive in this state. So that was one of my main motivations to do that, so that because I know fundamentally that as the business world goes, so goes every other phase of the state government, and that includes education, it includes Medicaid, it includes every phase of state government. And so that's why I ran, and I'm very, very excited to get back to work.
All right, now I'll get into questions, but a reminder to the folks at home, you can call in with your questions and comments at 800-228-5615. And again, for the listeners in the audience here at the Durand High School, just fill out a card and we will get to you as soon as we can. First off, I'd like to speak, I'll go to Warren Petrick about open government and transparency in government. And there have been accusations from groups on the Democratic side of the aisle that the Republicans in control of the state legislature haven't been operating as transparently as they could. One example that they cite is the pledges that were signed by Republican legislators not to talk in depth about the redistricting process. And Warren Petrick, did you sign this pledge, and do you feel that that infringed upon open government or transparency?
I did sign a document that was basically an agreement that would allow me to do my job, and it was a client privilege between the attorneys and myself. It was par for the course. It was routine. It's been done in the past, and so yes, and then we could get on with our job while the redistricting happened. There was someone that was able to look at the maps, do the demographic job. Then it's brought back to us. We look at it. And does it fit the constitutional requirements? It did. I voted for it. End of story.
All right. And Jeff Smith, both parties are guilty of being secretive when legislation is first being drafted. And both parties, when they have control of both houses of state government, are guilty of pushing through their legislation at whatever pace they choose. Because of this, a lot of voters have become cynical and don't really trust either party to be open when it comes to legislation. If elected, how would you regain that trust?
Well, let's revisit this secrecy document. It is not common practice, not at all. In fact, Mike Ellis, a state senator from the Green Bay area, I think Nina, actually, served for 40 years. He's a Republican. And he was appalled by the fact that they were asked to sign a secrecy document. In all his years, he said he's never been asked to do such a thing. And I think that is, I also think that that's appalling. You know, it says right in their talking points that they were handed is public comments on this map may be different than what you hear in this room. Ignore the public comments. All we heard from Warren Petrick in 2010 over and over was, you've listened to me for 38 years, and now it's my turn to listen to you. And within 4 months, he signed a document that he promised not to listen to the comments of the public. And I'm just myself totally appalled by that sort of behavior.
Warren Petrick, would you like to respond?
I did explain it very, very clearly. There's nothing else to add to that. I know that it is routine, and it was not anything that had to do with secrecy at all. And as I said, the documents were drafted. We vote on them. That's the end of that story. But actually, during this term, there was more transparency, perhaps, than in any other term as far as numbers of hours of public input into various bills that we passed, which was wonderful. I take, for example, the mining bill, which was incredibly transparent. We held more hours of public hearings than in any other time in history. So to be, even to have this coming up as a conversation is not germane to the conversation.
It's certainly not routine. And let's use the example of the final version of Act 10, which they passed without even 24 hours notice, without any public hearing. It was really an unfortunate and undemocratic process that was followed.
And speaking of Act 10, Jeff Smith, I'm going to go to you for the next question. Act 10, the law restricting what most public employees can collectively bargain over, it was easily one of the most controversial pieces of legislation that went through Madison. And now a judge in Dane County has ruled it is unconstitutional because police and fire personnel were exempted from the law, therefore creating two classes of public employees. If the judge's ruling holds up through the appeals process, the legislature will have to do something about this. We'll have to change the law. One possibility is to restrict collective bargaining for police and fire, or another is to restore collective bargaining for all public workers. Which would you choose?
Well, collective bargaining and having the right to a voice in your workplace is certainly something that, in this country anyways, we really treasure. I think that it's a valuable commodity. It's something that's more than just a privilege. It's something that we should expect to have when we're in our workplace. You know, this legislature in this this past session, their signature legislations, three of them now, as of this week, have been ruled unconstitutional. I mean, this was really interesting that you hear oftentimes that, you know, from that side is that, you know, they're not following the Constitution, when in fact that was exactly what was happening when this whole session by the Republicans on this during this legislative session. And it's really surprising and disappointing that this is the way they operated.
So if you were elected, I'll follow up. If you were elected to the Assembly, would you push to reinstate collective bargaining for public employees?
Absolutely.
All right. Warren Petrick, if Judge Colas's decision that Act 10 is unconstitutional is held up, that's a big if, of course, by the appeals and Supreme Courts, would you push to limit bargaining for police and fire in order to take care of that constitutional challenge?
Well, Rich, it's purely speculative. We'd have to look at exactly how the ruling would come down and what the what was left after the appellate court looks at it, after the Supreme Court looks at it. I'm very confident that it will be held up. We followed every constitutional mandate that was on us as far as passing the law. It was completely legal. And it is, pure and simple, a legislative privilege that had outlived its usefulness and its affordability. We were looking at something that would fundamentally change the way we do business in the state. And what it did was allow local government elected officials the respect to do what they should do, and that is to deal with their restricted budgets. We knew there were going to be cuts. We knew that going in. And there wasn't a single legislature that could possibly not have cut every program in the state, looking at a $3.6 billion deficit that we were handed. So we looked at that and we said, what can we give as a management tool? And that was a great option for every administrator, every municipality, to be able to ask for reasonable contributions. And so I'm very, very secure in my thought that the Supreme Court will uphold this. It's just a matter of time.
I have to disagree with with most of what you said, but certainly I just cannot ever believe that our workers in the workplace and their ability to speak up for their experience in the workplace, for what their rights are in the workplace, has been outlived. In this country, I believe everybody's voice should be heard and that she'll never be outlived.
Warren Petrick, would you like to respond? Otherwise, I've got a follow-up for Jeff Smith.
In the recent round of recalls, I believe what we had was a mandate on this decision. I believe that the state is entirely behind our decisions. I feel very secure, again, that this decision will hold, and it was made out of respect for, in the long run, those that are on the service end of every state program.
And Jeff Smith, would you deny that these local governments were able to save a lot of money by either in school districts by either changing their health insurance plans or by requiring the increased contributions?
First of all, their health insurance plans, it's a misnomer to believe that they weren't able to take bids on. We all know that they took bids publicly, whether it be school districts, cities, villages, wherever it may be. They took bids for their health programs, and they took the lowest bids, you know. So, you know, all in all, collective bargaining is something that actually benefited taxpayers. It's very much so. We never forget that the people sitting on both sides of the table were all taxpayers, all living in the community that they're all working, that they're all building and working for. And everybody has the same vested interests in making sure that community is able to thrive, and the children within that community are going to succeed down the road. So, you know, I tend to think that sometimes we've really put ourselves in a position where we think that opposite sides of the table means we are not working together, and we should be working together.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Westside 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum. And if you want to take part in the forum, you can give us a call at 800-228-5615 or write out your question on a card, and we'll get you, those in the audience, a microphone to ask the direct questions to the candidates. We'll be right back, and we'll take some questions from our live audience and the listeners at home when we return. If you would like to listen to this forum again, check out the Westside Online Archives by going to WPR.org and clicking on the Westside link. You can stream and download this program after we post it tonight, or you can listen to any of the other nine state legislative candidate forums we've had leading up to Election Day. I'm with State Representative Warren Petrick, Republican incumbent from Aliva, and Jeff Smith, he's the Democratic challenger from Eau Claire. This is the Westside 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum. And if you have a question or a comment, if you're in the audience, you can fill out a card and we'll get it to you as soon as we can. If you're at home, give us a call, 800-228-5615. And we'll take our first live audience member question, and this one will be from Paul in Durand. And if Paul is in the audience, go ahead and step up and we'll get a microphone to you, and feel free to go ahead.
Yes, my question is, if the last session was such a success and you delivered the tools to the local governments to deal with their issues, it seems like the Durand School District is asking for a $600,000 referendum this year in addition to our normal taxes, and Pepin County is also having budget issues. So do you actually think your procedure in this past session accomplished what you claim that it did?
Directed to me?
Yeah, yes, please.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I appreciate the question. It's a good question. And yes, I do believe that that's exactly the case, especially going forward. As we move forward, this is going to be a management ability to look at all of the costs that we have and allow the school boards, in this case, to sit down with the employees and work out the details of exactly how it will work out best for the locals. Now, referendum is going to always be a management tool that's actually a good one, and the people can make up their decision and say, yes, we can afford this, or no, they can't. At least it's not state mandated. So I wanted it to be about local government. I really felt that that was the best way that we could handle this. Madison should not be mandating to Durand or Pepin or any other school district on how they should best serve their students. I believe that that is why this was a great idea statewide. And I believe that that answers your question, I hope.
Well, the biggest mandate coming out of Madison is the arrogance that Madison has by setting revenue limits on all the districts. I mean, how does Madison determine that there should be a 3.8% revenue limit, I think that's the number, on school districts when they have no idea, district by district, the needs that they have and the money that they're going to need. And then on top of that, to cut $1.6 billion from our public education system in the state of Wisconsin, and then turn around and send $300 million to the private voucher schools that aren't accountable, aren't expected to test the same as our public schools. I mean, none of this adds up, and you can't do all of those things and then turn around and say, well, Madison shouldn't be mandating to our public schools. You can't have it both ways.
And again, to our audience, if you could please hold off on the clapping until we take breaks and come back from breaks, I would appreciate it. Now we're going to go to our callers, and Dave in Eau Claire has a question, and we'll get him on the air, and he's got a question about the budget. Dave, you there?
Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call. When the Democrats controlled the legislature and Governor Doyle tried to negotiate with the unions, he tried really hard, and he failed miserably. And then during the lame duck session, the unions tried to ram no changes again to the contract, ram a contract through. You know, they just got nowhere, and the unions actually said that they wouldn't negotiate with Governor Walker, and Act 10 occurred, the budget repair bill, and we had this huge crescendo of protesters, and finally they got a verbal agreement to some concessions. And so after all of that, and in light of that our budget deficit was $3.6 billion, and the transfer payments to local municipalities and schools makes up such a significant, I think it's well over half of our budget, and labor is our biggest expense. Mr. Smith, how on earth, you throw these little tiny things like this Milwaukee parochial school deal with a few million dollars, how are you going to come up with $3.6 billion?
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Dave. Jeff Smith.
I'm glad you think $300 million is small. But $3.6 billion deficit, I like to always give a little lesson about budgets. First of all, in the state of Wisconsin, we have a constitutional obligation to balance a budget. Every budget is balanced, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, whether it's the governor, whether it's the legislature. Every budget is balanced. It isn't balancing the budget that's an accomplishment, which is what I hear from Mr. Petrick all the time, is that what an accomplishment that is. It's not an accomplishment at all, because everybody does it. It's how you balance the budget. And when you use tricks such as a credit card, like this legislature did, putting off our payments for a couple of years so that we are going to be paying an extra, I got that number right over here, just a second here. We got an extra, I think, $40 million, $42 million or something like that, that we're going to be paying, $87 million total by 1934. I mean, to put that off so our children and grandchildren are paying instead of us paying, I think that's a shame. But what's most disgraceful and disingenuous is claiming that they didn't use any tricks to balance the budget and that they balanced the budget, when in fact, you know, it's just not true. Now, to answer your question, by the way, I was there in the end of the 2010 session, and a lot of bad, weird things happened that were related to the incoming governor, when a couple of Democratic senators seemed to have suddenly decided to not vote for the contracts that were agreed to. There were contracts agreed to with the 6% cuts that eventually were in Act 10. The same cuts. And unfortunately, they were not passed by the Senate after we passed them in assembly because of the, in fact, one of those senators, by the way, got an appointment afterwards by the Governor Walker. So, a lot of unfortunate things happen in politics that we all are ashamed of. We wish that wouldn't happen. And we could have had those contracts signed and done if Governor Walker would have wanted them. But in fact, he didn't want them. He wanted to be able to take away their collective bargaining rights instead.
Warren Petrick, would you like to respond?
I certainly would. Let's look back at that budget of 2009. I believe that budget was balanced with tax fees, tax increases, fee increases. We moved money around in accounting tricks. One-time stimulus funds were used to prop up Medicaid, which was actually a tragedy that we had to deal with in real dollars for the first time in many years. And they put stimulus money from the federal government into that program, which artificially propped it up. They borrowed more, and there were state employee layoffs. They raided segregated funds, such as transportation. It goes on and on. It was a poorly handled budget. We looked at this. We said, let's deal with real dollars this time. Let's deal with $3.6 billion budget in real time. And so in order to come up with that, we had to, as I said, come up with a way that local governments could save money from the cuts that were inevitably coming. They put us in a really terrible position. And I'd like to go back to that, a couple of comments recently that were made about a $1.6 billion cut to education is totally false. And I think everyone is quite familiar with PolitiFact, and that was, of course, totally debunked. It was not that deep a cut. Also, they were talking about educator layoffs, totally false. Once again, Peter Barkas said that the Assembly voted to take funding away from public school districts. I believe that's one of my opponent's points. Give it to Milwaukee. Voucher schools actually saves money for the taxpayer. It's a good idea, and we could go into a lot of detail there. But we balance this budget in an honest way, in a transparent way, and I know that the taxpayers are the winner in this thing, and I'm very, very proud of the decisions that we made.
Well, the winners who aren't winners, the taxpayers who are not winners, were people who relied on the earned income tax credit, people who relied on the homestead tax credit. The people who need it the most were the ones that were cut in this budget. You balance the budget on the backs of the people who are in the greatest need. While you turned around instead and gave tax exemptions to junk mail and to your friends who are now bankrolling this campaign and pouring all those slanderous lies into the mailboxes as we speak about me. So, you can try to cover it up as much as you want that you did all these right things, but the truth is, $3.6 billion deficit that you were looking at, that was not a true deficit. We actually, in the January of 2011, there was $130 million, and you all received the memo. 2 weeks before Governor Walker announced he needed to fix the budget, they got a memo that you had a surplus of $130 million. Now you guys are bragging about a $200 million surplus that you're going to put in a rainy day fund. Where was that rainy day fund in 2011? Why wasn't that money put in a rainy day fund then? Instead, it was given away and thrown away so then you could talk about having some sort of deficit you had to fix.
Well, Jeff, that's really interesting because what we did was take that money and pay off bills that were accrued under previous legislatures. We paid off almost $850 million in accrued expenses, and that included raids on segregated funds that had to be paid back, such as the Patients' Compensation Fund, and that was there was the Transportation Fund raiding. We paid back Minnesota Reciprocity, any number of bills. So now, finally, we created a surplus of about $342 million. And of that, we put about half into a rainy day fund, so legislatures that get greedy can't go after that. It is there for emergency purposes. We pray that we never have anything like they're facing out east. Our hearts go out to them, certainly. And also giving money away to anyone, we did not. We made tax incentives, which is incredibly good for business. We want people to come to the state. We want them to invest in our state. And these, in order to pay taxes, you have to make a profit. It's a basic fundamental economics lesson there. But tax incentives are very, very healthy for the future of the state.
And with that, I'd like to move on here. We've got another question from the audience, and we'll go next to Pete. Reminder to the listeners at home, you can call in at 800-228-5615. And if you missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out the Westside Online Archives. Go to WPR.org and click on the Westside link. Pete, go ahead.
I want to talk to Mr. Petrie. It seems like the state keeps cutting. I'm on the county board. I'm chairman of the county board. And we're looking at trying to cut $125,000 out of our budget this year. Now, some of the reason for that is you have cut aids to our highway. You have cut our shared revenues. You have told us that we can't increase our budget, I think, 2,000 or $3,000. And so we're going to have to do some cutting. I guess I'd rather get voted off the county board by raising a small amount of taxes than I would cutting people's jobs. All I hear is jobs, 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 and all I hear at the county is we got to cut people, we got to cut people. Those are jobs we're cutting. Are the only jobs that we talk about are jobs in the private sector?
All right, and Warren Petrick, if you would like to respond.
I don't think he's done.
I tried to say to you is, why don't you let the county run themselves and quit cutting our shared revenues all the time? And also quit cutting our highway expenditures? Obviously, we have a crew of our highway, and if you keep cutting, we aren't going to why would they be there to work? There's no work for them because they don't have money to do the roads.
All right.
So I really feel that if the state kind of stayed where they should be, that we'd be much better off.
Thank you very much, Pete. Warren Petrick, and then we'll get Jeff Smith to respond.
Thank you, Pete. These are good comments, and thank you very much. I know I appreciate your work with the county over the years. I know you've been a longtime employee, and I know you're doing very, very well, and with all of the amazing challenges that you're up against. Cutting shared revenue was all along with cutting aids to education, aids to the universities, aids to, across the board. So shared revenue was part of that. We tried to give you the tools that you can deal with this in the future, but of course, in a bad economy, and we are facing a very, very flat, if not declining, revenue source. So we're going to have to look at the future and hope that things are going to be better. I know we won't be facing the deficit that we were, but I'm very anxious to see the new numbers as soon as the new budget requests are put in. I know that we did protect local municipalities and towns as much as we could, and also, I believe, the Trip D fund, which is discretionary for you, was increased by about $10 million. And I hope that you took advantage of that. I'm not sure. We haven't had that discussion, you and I, but we're going to do our very best to keep towns and counties very strong going into the future. And it will be a huge priority. Of course, shared revenue is about 8% of our budget, I believe. Education is about 50%. So, of course, education will remain our number one priority. That will not change. I don't see that happening at all.
Jeff Smith.
You know, a budget is a moral document. And so you can judge this legislature, and you can judge when I was in office. This is what makes this a unique opportunity for voters, by the way. You've got that opportunity to judge us by where our budgets were and how we voted. And in this particular legislature, they chose to spend even more money, by the way. Their budget was even greater than ours. And cut the services that we need the most in this state and that we treasure the most. Education. Badger care for children who need it, for families who need it. You know, help for homestead credit loan exemptions for people who need it the most. And then spend the money taking your tax dollars and putting it into the pockets of the private sector to because of this theory that they're going to make the rest of us better. And, you know, I haven't seen it. That hasn't worked in 30, 40, or 50 years that's been out there. And, you know, fortunately we have a president right now who also sees that that is not the way that we should be going.
Warren Petrick, you'd like to respond?
I'm not sure where we get this. Putting money in the pockets of the private sector, actually, this incentive that we're talking about, I'm not sure you understand, is people have to make a profit before incentives kick in. We have no money to give away. There was no money. The state makes no money. It takes in revenue, of course, this is very quite simple, but we take in revenue only from taxes. That's our only source. Private sector does create money because they're dealing with profits. So we're trying to incentivize those businesses so that our tax base is better. Hence, as the community goes, so goes education, so goes health care, and especially health care for the poor. We did not cut Badger Care. We actually saved senior care, Badger Care, family care are all programs that are very dear to my heart. And I am on that committee, and I'm very proud of the work that we're doing. We actually lifted the caps on certain programs, which is really good. I think things are going to be much healthier in the future. I'm very optimistic, and I'm really hoping, Peter, that there will be more shared revenue this time around.
Well, as a matter of fact, you did vote to cut Badger Care by 60,000 people, but fortunately the federal government stepped in and said that wasn't possible or that was illegal for you to do, but you still ended up cutting 17,000 people from Badger Care. You know, we didn't answer Pete's question, actually, because I would like to, because being a towns guy, I'll tell you, that shared revenue, formula is really important. And unfortunately, over many decades, that has been chiseled away and chiseled away. And the road aids and shared revenue is something that is very important, and we need to restore that and get it back to a level that our money, our tax dollars, is coming back from Madison to help us and not always going to Milwaukee.
All right, Warren Petrick, quickly, we've got to take a break. A comment on
shared revenue and shared revenue, not at that level only, but at the school level. The two formulas, everyone, I believe, perhaps both of us even would agree that it's broken and needs to be revisited. I know that there will be commissions looking at this very carefully of how do we fund schools in the future. We can't depend on the property tax. Obviously, properties are right now in decline. So we have to look at new sources for roads, especially transportation. This is going to be a very, very delicate manner of looking at the future. How do we pay for our roads with more efficient, more gas-efficient cars, for example, on the road? As those revenues go down, we are going to have to be very creative and very careful. So there will be many discussions on how we can make this better.
We'll have more of the Westside 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum with Republican incumbent Warren Petrick and Democratic challenger Jeff Smith when we return. If you've missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out the Westside Archives by going to WPR.org and clicking on the Westside link. And for all of the election news you can stomach, go to WisconsinVote.org. You'll get candidate profiles and up-to-the-minute election news. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll finish up the forum when we return. You're listening to the Westside 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by Republican State Representative Warren Petrick and his Democratic challenger in this election, Jeff Smith. If you'd like to ask either of the candidates questions, you can give us a call at 800-228-5615, or you can post your name on a card here in the live studio or live gymnasium audience, I guess, and we will get a microphone to you as soon as possible. Now we're going to go to Donna from Arkansas. And Donna, you're on the air. Thanks for being here. And what's your question?
It's about silica sand mining.
Okay.
And I live next to the silica sand mine in the town of Frankfort. And this past year has been a real difficult year in dealing with that sand mine going in. And I've seen an overwhelmed county board and county officials not really having the expertise and ability to deal with this issue. I've also seen my town board scramble and just really feel overwhelmed with all the legal issues regarding this, and it's cost my town a lot of money. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be any guidance or help from the state in this matter that is affecting pretty much our whole western Wisconsin region and is changing the face of the area I live in very drastically. And as being a person living next door, I've already been told to expect my property values to decrease by 30%. So I'm wondering, what is the state willing to do? And at this point, I find the DNR overwhelmed and stressed out as well. They do not have the staff to cover these issues.
Thanks so much, Donna. Warren Petrick, we'll start with you.
Glad to help. Thank you very much, Donna, for the question. And I do not live near a sand mine, but I can really empathize with your concerns. I have heard these over and over from people throughout this district, the new district especially. The old one actually didn't have any sand mines there. But I have been meeting on many occasions with all of the stakeholders in sand mining, everyone from the people where the land is located to those that are nearby to the experts in the DNR. And what the DNR is telling me at this point is they're very confident that they're able to handle everything that's happening. Now, you may have a different take on that, and I'm basically speaking to bureaucrats. So I think that what we need is a good conversation between those that are truly affected. But what I really am going to emphasize, and I really want to make this clear, is that I don't want the state mandating what that will look like for you, because you're going to be one of my constituents and a taxpayer, and I want you to be able to handle it locally. Now, the county board may be overwhelmed at this point, but we are there as a resource at any time. Anytime that there are concerns, we can handle that. But I have often told people that are involved with this to look at the Town of Howard model, which has been very, very successful, and I'm sure they are looking at that, and get a good lawyer and have your public hearings. Those are the main ways of us to deal with it locally. The state should not be mandating this. We've been mining sand for a long, long time. Of course, the scale is much different than it has been. So I think we'll be there to listen and be very, very careful. There have been several bills that have started but have not really gotten any traction. So I'm anxious to see what the state will provide. I'm wide open to the discussion. And with this, if the state has to come in, I think we have to be very careful about preemption, always. I'm just so cautious about not having local control over such an important issue, because it's your house and it's your family. And it's an industry that is burgeoning. It's really very, very profitable, and it creates good jobs. So I'm anxious to see the business do well, but I'm very anxious to protect our citizens. That's our number one goal.
All right.
Thank you, Donna.
Yes, thank you, Donna. Jeff Smith, do you think the state should take more of a role, the legislature, in this issue?
And the Maine that's being talked about, I've been up there, and I haven't been talking to bureaucrats. I've actually been talking to the people who are being affected. And that's actually a good example of the way things shouldn't have been done. It wasn't a good plan. They found some sand. They're going to dig it up, and they want to make a lot of money. But they hadn't thought about, well, where are they going to take it next? And they were going to take it next. And now we're talking about a lot of travel on the roads. I mean, there's all sorts of issues here that weren't addressed when that one started. That's a great example. And it wasn't addressed, and I talked to all the neighbors there, that their wells are all being affected. Each one of them have had to replace their well pump already, and the mine won't, and the mining company is refusing to take any responsibility for that. You know, so I mean, these are the sorts of things they do need help. Now, just saying that they need to get a good lawyer, that's exactly why these companies are able to come into these town halls and intimidate them and say, we're going to bankrupt our town if you try to stop us, because they know how expensive it's going to be for them to get a good lawyer and to take it as far as that as they're willing to take it. So we need, as a state, the answer is, we need as a state to be supporting local government as much as possible, give them as much, whether it be, we need to be talking to them, what do they want? What do towns want and need to feel the support that they, so that they are able to hold off bad actors? You know, we know there's responsible mining companies as well, but we want to make sure that they are able to control the bad actors in this industry as well.
Warren Petrick?
We do know that most of the companies want to be good neighbors, and actually this blackmail that you're talking about, Mr. Smith, doesn't make any sense. It's not legal, and I don't believe that that is happening. However, the lawyer that I was referring to was not for you. I'm thinking that the county or the municipality that's dealing with it should get a good lawyer and look at the document, look at the Town of Howard model, as I said, which was actually helped written by one of my former professors, and he did a great job of sitting down with all the players and saying, how can we take this forward, and how can we be good neighbors? And again, if they do anything illegal, if they're ruining your well, there are legal recourses, and then you need to talk to us, and we can,
I'd like to follow up with both of you, and with if the state, a lot of people agree that local control is very important, but what about a mineral extraction fee? A lot of states have this. We've got hundreds of millions of tons of Wisconsin sand leaving the state, headed for Bakken, the oil shale in North Dakota, Texas, where have you. Would you support the idea of a mineral extraction fee? I'll start with you, Jeff Smith.
Sure, and that's the sort of thing we're talking about here. You need to give towns the opportunity to be able to get something out of this, as well as being able to support them in how they make those decisions that they're going to make. And, you know, maybe, Warren, if you had been in the town halls like I have been and heard these threats, you'd know what I'm talking about, rather than just talking to the bureaucrats. But because they're real, and that is, and any town board member will tell you that that's real. But that's an idea, of course. I'm sorry to answer your question, and there's a lot of ideas like that. But certainly, who's going to be replacing the roads, and who's going to be making sure that the neighbors are protected, and who's going to protect their property values? That's a really big deal.
And Warren Petrick, thoughts on a mineral extraction fee?
And these are all things that can be worked out in the agreement, of course. I'm not in favor of any new taxes of any sort at this point, not in this economy. But we could look carefully at what the wording would be going forward. And again, if this is a local thing, we may have to give some taxing authority. I'm not putting it out of the question. I think that the discussion will be ongoing. I'm excited about a new commission that we'll be looking at, which will include all of the players down at the state capitol. So I'm very excited about the future, and we will watch out for you, I promise you that.
We'll go back to the phone lines, and this time we're going to go to Eau Claire, and Paul is on the line. Paul, he's got a question about the Polaris plant closing. Are you there, Paul?
Yes, I'm here. This is an Economic Development Corporation question, I guess. 2 years ago, the Polaris Corporation, which also includes the Victory Motorcycles and the Can-Am Corporations, it's a very large corporation. Closed manufacturing plant in Osceola, Wisconsin, displacing 500 people into unemployment to move this labor down to Mexico. And then this past summer, they announced reintroducing 80 jobs into the company, and the state of Wisconsin, the governor, and the Economic Development Corporation gave $600,000 to the Polaris Corporation to incubate these 80 new jobs. And it's my understanding that over the past 4 years, corporate CEOs and hierarchy in the company are still paying themselves tremendous salary increases, bonuses, and incentives to the tune of nearly $16 million. And why are they getting these bonuses, salary increases, and incentives, displacing workers, and then the state of Wisconsin gives them $600,000 to incubate 80 new jobs into Osceola? If I could get some feedback and whether or not the government is opening the books on these corporations to see if they need this incubation money.
Warren Petrick?
You know, sir, Paul, thank you for your question, but I would have to research this more carefully to see exactly if your allegations are correct. I'm just sorry. I'm not familiar enough with this. The WEDC, which is the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, is a quasi-public-private enterprise that's designed to help incubate. I don't know of this particular instance. I'm sorry. But I will look into it for you. I can find out exactly what has happened. $16 million, I'm sure, had nothing to do with us. I don't know where that's coming from. So you threw a lot of information at me, but I am sorry. I will. Please leave your name and address with the producer, and I will get back to you with the facts within a day or so.
Well, but as we do know, this Economic Development Corporation is now under scrutiny because there was no accountability built into this whole new concept, and which is, of course, a great fear of when you want to try to privatize something. And so our tax dollars are going away and being handed out without anybody actually scrutinizing where it's going and how it's being spent. And I think that is certainly a good question to ask, Paul, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Warren Petrick.
Well, actually, what has happened is an incredible changeover of bureaucracies. It was the Department of Commerce. In order to change it over and to only have $7 million unaccounted for is quite amazing when we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars. It was a big bureaucracy change, and I know that will be found. It's not, I know it wasn't lost or stolen. It's just a bookkeeping error, I would guess, at this point. But there is an ongoing investigation into what happened there. I'm sure we'll have our answers very shortly. But, Paul, I would really love to get back to you as soon as possible.
And we will take our final question, and that will go to Bruce. And Bruce is in the audience here at the Durand High School gym. If you could please ask your question as quickly as possible. We've got about 3 minutes left. Go ahead.
Well, I have a scenario for you. Suppose Obamacare is repealed and a Romney-Ryan administration cuts 30% to 40% from Medicaid, as they promised. What can the state legislature do to protect the most vulnerable elderly people and disabled people and children to keep them from dying on the street?
Let's start with Jeff Smith, and then we'll go to Warren Petrick.
I'm afraid, Bruce, that that's a worst-case scenario, so let's hope that that doesn't happen, because the Affordable Care Act is in place to actually ensure that everybody is insured and everybody has medical care as needed, rather than the, what you're talking about. And answer your question, if that happens, I think that we're all, the state is just not going to be able to do anything. I mean, right, we need actually the legislature and a governor to step up and implement the Affordable Care Act and get those exchanges in place, and let's get moving. Like we need progress in that area.
Warren Petrick, very close to the top of the hour.
I'm sorry. Thank you for the question. $700 billion, I believe, would be cut from Medicaid if Obamacare does go through. This is an amazing. All right. 30 to 40% from Medicaid is what you're claiming. I don't believe that this will happen. Medicaid will stay as strong as we possibly can make it. As I said, we put real dollars into it for the first time in a long time. So we have OCI, the Office of the Commissioner on Insurance. We have leadership looking at this, and we're going to make sure that those exchanges are ready to go just in case there's no change next week.
Thank you. That is our time. I'd like to thank our candidates for being part of this forum and for helping inform our listeners. Republican incumbent Warren Petrick and Democratic challenger Jeff Smith, thank you both so much. Thanks to the folks at the Durand High School for helping pulling this together. Tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio on election night for nonstop coverage until every race has been called. And to wrap up the political season, we'll be back next Thursday at this time on the West Side for a post-mortem of the 2012 elections. We'll have Mort Cypress, political science professor emeritus from UW-Eau Claire, and political science professor Jeff Peterson. That's next Thursday at 5 o'clock on 88.3. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.